This presentation is based on Bhagavad Gita. It's presented, the frame of it is different, but the message is from Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, one of the first messages that's presented is helping the person who's receiving Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, to understand the difference between a material and spiritual conception of self. So that's the goal. And I'm going to use a metaphor of an iceberg to help me. There's the tip of an iceberg. And the iceberg metaphor is to compare how one might see the self or oneself. So there's a physical conception of self, and the physical conception is the body and the behaviors of the body, what the body does, its activity. Very limited conception. One of the things that I didn't like about psychology when I studied in college, because it was, at least the brand at the time that was really popular, was behavioral psychology, stimulus response psychology. Psychology, people's behaviors are nothing but, what people are is nothing but a bundle of stimuluses and the responses to stimuli. So, very superficial view of a personality, just like the tip of the iceberg is superficial view of the iceberg. Below the tip of the iceberg is, you know, the vast body of what an iceberg is. So below behaviors are the mental portion of an individual, and according to Bhagavad Gita, the Vedic wisdom, thinking, feeling, and willing are the functions of the mind. And practically, universally, before there's an action, even like a involuntary response to something, there's a thought and a feeling and a volition. Before this chair was manufactured, somebody designed, had an idea, made a design, and then there was a chair after some time. Before anything is of this physical realm, there's something that takes place on the subtle realm. Still, so the mental conception, the body, the mind. There's another dimension also, that the values and beliefs of a person or a group of persons. Bhagavad Gita certainly is dealing with Arjuna's values and beliefs. He looks at the situation that happens after the introduction in chapter 1. There's a battle. He requests Krishna, please draw my chariot in between the two armies so I can see who is arrayed on both sides. He takes a look at the scene, looks at his values, and has certain feelings, and says, this is going to be my behavior. I shall not fight. But it's resting upon his values. And that those, a core part, just like with education, with modern education, it's like just perform. But a more complete picture of education, or what, from the Vedic conception, real education is training character. Because if you have a person that may not know some skill, if they have good character, you can train them in some skill. And if they don't have good character, you don't want them around. So those persons that are like recruiters, they certainly are interested in what skills you have, but they're also trained to look at what your character is. Are you a good person to have with our company, our part of our team? So, values is the basis upon which thoughts and feelings and values and beliefs can be cultivated with deep thought and intelligent pursuit. Not always, but that good values and good character to that, but that's... So this is a more complete picture of a person. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks to Arjuna when Arjuna says, I really don't know what's best for me to do, please instruct me. Krishna starts taking the instructor role rather than just the friend of Arjuna, and he explains, besides all of this, there's something else that's on another dimension altogether, that's the spirit soul. Actually, the spirit soul animates matter. Matter appears to be alive because of the presence of the soul. And the whole section, chapter 2, discussing the soul. And when you take all of these together, that's a more complete or holistic picture of who is the self. And one who can see the spirit soul or understand the presence of the spirit soul in an individual can then see with equal vision all so many different individuals, although they may have different bodies and different minds and different intellects, different values. Intrinsic within all beings is the spiritual spark, and so that capacity of seeing leads to a universal vision or equal vision. And that becomes especially valuable when you have interpersonal feelings. We'll come to that in a moment. If somebody knew how to do the technology, it'd be... I don't. I was thinking that to show the iceberg and the Titanic coming, floating along, and because it... What happened was the Titanic, when it launched from New York to London, that did the arc going through the northern region, and they saw an iceberg out in the distance, but it had this huge part down below the surface of the water that they didn't calculate and hit the iceberg. And the Titanic sank. A lot of people died. Big calamity. Because they just looked at the tip, they didn't look at the whole thing. So similarly, when we have interpersonal dealings, well, even personal, like who we are, or similarly interpersonal, if we don't have a clear sense of who the other person is, then there's guaranteed going to be conflict and clash in interpersonal dealings. We're not going to be satisfied and contented within either. Quickly, I'll describe when I was a university student, the first lecture that I heard Srila Prabhupada speak. In the university setting. A little bit larger audience than we have here today, but he was sitting in the front and made a motion with his hand like this. He said, imagine in the front here there's this pond of water. He gave everybody a pebble, stone, little stone. He said, place your stone in the pond of water, one at a time. When you do that, a little splash and concentric circles expand out. And it's very nice. Then another person, same thing. It's all very nice until the concentric circles collide with one another, and then there's some clash. Then you take everyone combined and place their pebble in the surface of the water, and it's big chaos. However, if there's an assigned place where everyone places their pebble, and it's the concentric circles amplify one another, and there's no conflict. So, similarly, I hope I explained, if we can identify the central part of the individual soul's common existence, and place all of our individual efforts and abilities and strengths and capacities there, there's unity, and it gives added strength to each of the individual's efforts. But if you don't have that spiritual connection with one another, but this exercise of individuality, you have conflict. So this is what's wanted, this sense of, from the spiritual position of who I am, acting in the fullness of my own individuality, but connecting with the fountainhead, or the source, or the supreme soul. That's desirable. And a little illustration, not from Bhagavad Gita, but from Srimad Bhagavatam, that illustrates this. When pouring water on the root of the tree, naturally all the parts of the tree get nourishment from putting water there. Similarly, if we can find the root of all existence and place our talents, abilities, intelligence, strength, effort, energy, everything there, then the whole tree of existence, or that which comes from that root of all existence, is benefited. That's the ideal of spiritual conception of I. But then comes the my conception, and the my conception extends from the I conception. In Sanskrit it's aham mama. So the conception of mind is that which is in relation to me. So if I think of the self in terms of the body, then whatever this body produces, that's mine. So like my work, I do some work and it produces some fruit of work, and that's mine. The fruitive mentality, mentioned many places in Bhagavad Gita, is that concept that says, I work and the fruit of the work is mine. And like, let's say, the manufacturer of the chair, the designer of the chair. I designed the chair and the manufacturer made it, but the chair is mine. The carpenter from just wood and nails and hammer and stuff and makes a chair, and now this is mine because I made it. And I go over to the marketplace and sell it. And from that I get some money, and with that money is mine. And money buys some stuff. And the stuff is mine because it came from me. It's mine. And then now I have this stuff, so now I have a family. My wife and my children and my house and my car and my bank balance and my mortgage payments and my taxes and mine. All this stuff that came from me is mine. And that's the common physical conception of my. And it leads to my group, the bodies that are like mine. So not only cats and dogs fight, but people also fight, because there's some identification on the platform of the body. What's mine is my group. So you get groupism, and then my group's interest may be different than another group's interest, and so we have a little tussle. They're like, who's going to be the superior group here? Again, it starts with the focus upon the body and the likenesses of the body. We're going to get to ideas next. And it breeds conflict. Mind concept on a physical level. Then the mind concept on the mental plane, even without like going there, just in the mind. It's described in Bhagavad Gita, by contemplating objects of the senses, one develops some attachment. And I wish to make that mine. Whether it's the opposite sex or money or something, by contemplating, I wish to make it mine. So it's some attachment, and the flip side of attachment is that which interferes with it, aversion. And life on this platform of mind, it's a very strong emotional content, and what is driven by that leads to behaviors that are described above also. and my natural, peaceful, balanced state of well-being becomes disturbed. And we just observed September 11th yesterday. This is an ideology, value platform, by whatever thought processes lead people to hold certain values. One person's values may clash with another person's values. So I have attachment to those that have my value system and an aversion to those that have a different value system. And one strives to, like, impose their value system on others, commonly, so that I feel safe or something. Now, there's a spiritual conception of my. This is an illustration of a verse from Bhagavad Gita, where a saintly person is viewing life, or in this case, it's death. This person over here is dying, and the person surrounding the dying person, they're lamenting because our friend or relative or loved one is now gone. But the learned person or the wise person is seeing the spirit soul, not just the bodies, but the spiritual identity and spiritual reality. And so that sense of my moves to the platform of the soul. Ultimately, the proprietor of the soul, it's described in Bhagavad Gita, is one of Krishna's energies. So each one of us are Krishna's. And on the spiritual plane, what's mine is my relationship with Krishna. That's what's mine. That's something that can't be taken away. Everything else, the body, the state of mind, even if the subtle body, can be taken because it's another material energy. But the soul, intrinsic to the soul, is this relationship with the Supreme. So on the spiritual plane, one is free from attachment and aversion, this really strong driving force of duality. And there's a sense of seeing with equal vision, seeing in relation to the Supreme. The my concept on the spiritual plane. And again, we have this example of directing our energies to the Supreme. I'm going to go back and speak a little bit about death. Something that we probably all encountered, someone that we know, friend, relative, somebody, leaves their body, go away. Recently happened in the experience I had, I just quickly narrated. Shivaraja and his wife, you know, the family in New York? Okay. Chaitanya Nanda and his brother, you know those two in New York? No, okay. There's somebody that I've known for 40 years, a family, Gujarati family, from like 40 years ago. They started coming to the temple, and I was living in the temple, and made friendship with them. They became initiated disciples of Prabhupada, husband and friend. Later they had children, the children grew up. And so their whole life was Krishna-centered. Really, really, really good, wholesome people, very devoted family, husband, wife, and both boys. Fantastic. Spiritually focused individuals. Through aging, the husband is now close to 70, the wife was in her 60s, mid-60s, so you're senior citizens. And she had a health problem. And she went to see the doctor. The doctor had her hospitalized. She had respiratory problems. She couldn't breathe so well. So they tried this and that, and finally they put her on a respirator. So it's just like it kept deteriorating. The respirator was working, but she still had, it was painful. And she, you know, when you can't breathe, it's tough. So different medications, different this and that, and the condition continued to deteriorate. And eventually she lost motor functions, except she could move her hands and she could move her eyes. So she's lying in a hospital bed, immobilized, in great pain, with sedatives, highly drugged up. Right? But her mind was working very clearly, and her hands could work, and her eyes could work, and that was about it. And then it like, took a downward, I don't know exactly what happened, but a really serious downward turn. And then the doctors did their examination and came to the conclusion that they were basically two choices. Have a tracheotomy, like remove her throat and put in another one. And maybe it'll be successful, and if it's successful, she could have another 2 to 3 months duration of painful life. Or recognize that this is the end of the line and take her off the respirator, and she would have a half an hour to 2 hours of before she left her body. So the doctor told the family decided we'll sit with our mother and his wife and see what she wants. So they explained, and with her hand she indicated the second one. She just like, I recognize, she couldn't speak, but so they were saying, this means recognizing the body is no longer fit to reside in, but you live a good, wholesome life, and very fixed and absorbed in spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. And as you fix your consciousness upon Krishna, Bhagavad Gita teaches you go to Krishna. And she moved her hand. She wanted that. She was in a lot of pain. So many devotees came. They had kirtan with the mother was moving her hand. She was in front of her, above her bed. So she lying down, picture of the deities, Radha Govinda, picture of Prabhupada, the spiritual master, and her eyes were moving back and forth, her hand was moving with the kirtan, her consciousness was absorbed in Guru and Krishna and the holy name. And that condition, she left her body. And on the one hand, it was very sad, and on the other hand, it was very glorious. Because there was no need for lamenting when you understand. Lamenting is the loss of that person's association. But when the understanding is clear where that soul will go because of where their consciousness was fixed at the time of leaving the body, very wonderful place. Not in our physical proximity, but in a very wonderful place. So there was mixed happiness and sadness. Happy for the mother, for her well-being, sad that we didn't have her association. And that happened just before I came here to visit you all. Funeral. But without spiritual consciousness, there's fear of death. It's like, not just human beings, all species of life, the birds and insects and you name it. Anything, any spirit soul with the body, it's part of that covering of the soul. It's the product of the mode of ignorance in the language of other people. How do you overcome that? How do you overcome the influence of material nature upon the soul? The binding force of material nature upon the soul. It's developing proper consciousness, and it's the proper consciousness development is described in Bhagavad Gita. There are options that we can select from, and the practices of yoga systems, not just physical yoga, but work, karma yoga, knowledge, jnana yoga, devotion, bhakti yoga, and they're described in Bhagavad Gita to assist one developing, moving from the material conception of self to the spiritual conception of self, from the material conception of mind to the spiritual conception of mind. So I hope during the course of the semester you'll have some further session where you're going to be explaining the message of Father DBS, or someone will. Somebody will. I'm sure. So, that's the presentation. Father DBS, iceberg form. Any comments or discussion on this?
Can you describe the eye conception and please tell me describe value and belief system?
And which?
Value and belief system.
Okay. Want to go back there?
Okay. Okay.
This value and belief system, we are acting on the basis of value and belief, our thoughts and feelings coming in, and our actions are happening. So, how the value and belief, like everybody's values and beliefs are different.
Yeah.
For the system. So, is it from the past life or is it by the involvement?
Well, it's two things according to Bhagavad Gita. Guna and karma. And both are having something to do with our past life. But our past life is both actions and the modes of nature. Guna, the qualities with which we associate.
So, take for example, two people that are doing the same action. A factory worker, literally the same action, putting in the part, moves along, putting in the same action. But the consciousness that they're carrying may be different. The quality that they have accumulated or associated over a period of time. So the combination of those two, the actions that we perform, karma, and the qualities with which we associate over a period of time, that's going to influence our, in part, it's going to influence our values. I'll give two practical examples. One is, about 3 or 4 years ago, the central government of India had an epiphany. They realized that we're not doing our job properly. We're doing lots of technology education, but the values of our youth are going down and down. And so we, the educators, need to pay attention to this and do something. So they decided, they sent broadcast an invitation to persons who could provide, they called it a nice name, value education. That was their term, value education. And they especially turned to religious organizations and say, do you have curriculum that can teach value education to our school students? And many people submitted their curriculum. Our ISKCON Chalpati temple submitted a curriculum, and the government really liked it. And what they decided they would do was they would do a pilot, something like 100 schools, and teach the curriculum and then evaluate what the result was. Because through association, that's guna, through association of those with right quality, or elevated quality, would develop deeper values. And at least that was the theory, and they found it was very effective, and so they expanded it the next year and expanded it the next year. So it's through association. It can go the other way. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a description of Ajamila. You know the story of Ajamila. It was the other way around. He was very highly qualified, but one day he was going into the forest to gather wood for the sacrificial fire and other ingredients for the yajna. And when he was traveling on the path, he saw a prostitute and a shudra, young man and woman, going at it. And he was like, "Whoa, I've never seen that before." And he became attracted.
he became more than attractive. He became obsessed with associating with a prostitute. So, and it, gradually that direction was not going. So his good qualities went down through association. So he, you know, the values became lost because of different association. So the association we keep certainly affects our values. And the work that we do affects, we combine them together. So yes, past life. But it can change in the course of one's life, up or down. Yes?
You mentioned that things that a person associates as mine, that that association comes from their perception that it comes from themselves. But it seems to me that things that you perceive throughout these years can also constitute elements of who you think you are.
Oh, sure. One affects the other, for sure.
How can you be sure of the that that perception of being mine was caused by, if it's a circle like that, how can you?
Well, one, it's a little bit related to her question. You know, values and also the sense of mind can change. So one answer is you hold it up to the light of transcendental knowledge. Here's my, you know, one thing is where does this come from? But another thing is where does it fit in, you know, the picture of higher reality?
Especially when you get down to my values.
That's
the one thing. It's very difficult.
So the standard, aside from where it comes from, the standard of where does it fit in the big picture of reality? Like, is it a value that I should hold? Whether it came from someone else or came from myself. Where is it in the bigger picture of higher orders of reality? Is it a value that's going to lead me upward? Or is it a value that's going to keep me in the same place, or a value that's going to lead me down? There's a saying, you've probably heard it before, even the path to hell is paved by good intention. So people that do things that are hurtful to themselves or and or others may very well be their intention was a good intention. September 11th. Now those persons that flew the plane into the World Trade Tower. I, you know, can only guess that they were thinking, this is good. Allah, Allah. Because there's this horrible culture that's so degraded, and they want to make their horrible culture go all over the world. And there's a message to those people. Stop. Good intention. But from the light of Bhagavad Gita, that's faith in the word of ignorance, based upon destruction. Faith in the word of goodness is meek elevation.
Even in following good values, in holding them as yours, you still they're still constituting part of your identity. They're still,
yeah.
And you take that with you, and or do you separate yourself from it? Do you separate yourself from it as an identity and still follow it?
Yeah. Except when you really get down to, this is a great question, when you really get down to spiritual identity, there are some things that are values that are on the soul platform, feelings that are on the soul platform. They're not like circumstantial, coming and going. They're from the soul proper. Again, how you can understand that is through the light of transcendental knowledge. But
everything that's not from the soul is a fall away.
Yes, Yeah. And say it the other way around. When it's something that's of the soul, circumstance doesn't create it, doesn't take it away. It's always there. Stita D is the language of mother. It's steady intelligence. It doesn't waver. Fixed from the soul itself. Or if there's nothing material that causes it, nothing material that can check it. Favorable or unfavorable, can't cause it, can't check it. But it's springing from the soul. Knowledge and values and conceptions. It's not circumstantial, not a product of matter. Then there, but at the same time, there are standards, again, doing this like transcendental knowledge, if it holds to the light of transcendental knowledge and see, even if something arises that becomes very inspirational, but because I'm not sufficiently spiritually elevated, it fades. I can still hold that to the light of transcendental knowledge and see, am I headed in the right direction? It's like a visual example is like a light post or a lighthouse off in the distance when you're in darkness. It's the longest thing, you know, if there's not clouds or mist or something, even in darkness you can make your way to that place. Just even if the wind takes the boat this way, that way, just keep heading to the lighthouse. Now, how do I know, you know, what the lighthouse is all about? What's there? That's why transcendental knowledge is something that thoughtful persons wish to have. Read spiritual literature so you get a kind of collective sense of what is this wisdom? What are the common elements? What are the things that resonate? What are those principles by which I should guide my life? And is it something that's just imposed, or is it something that's within? And those things that resonate, at least those things, you move with. Continue to read, continue to experience. Recommended in the Vedic literature is through sound vibration, spiritual sound vibration, cleanses the heart, so that capacity to see improves. The opaqueness disappears and the transparency comes. Truth becomes more discernible, naturally, by cleansing of the heart. So, both things, I'm making the point here. Vedic wisdom teaches both things are needed, knowledge and the means of purification. One thing without the other is insufficient. The means of purification can lead to sentimentality and even fanaticism. So some feeling, some strong inspiration. So you need proper guidance. If you have proper guidance without a pure heart, it's theoretical. I can't follow. I don't connect. But you need both. The means of purification. Keep the heart, bring the heart to a pure state and keep it nicely clean. And how to direct my activities. Side by side, the metaphors, two tracks of the train to get to the destination, one track alone, the bus. Okay. Anything else? All right, we're ready for whatever's next.